You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to my couch here on LA Talk Radio. So nice to have you join me today. I have an amazing guest and two guests, actually. We're waiting for the other to come on. That's great because he has a whole bunch of other information that he's going to be providing us with as well. They're both the authors of an amazing book. So what they're really offering today are insights and wisdom to inspire you to re-envision and work on what's possible so you can overcome some obstacles and find the strength and confidence to run your life the way you truly choose. Everybody feels like, oh, I'm out of control. Everything else around me is controlling my life and it's horrible, and politics and taxes and the stressors and my finances and my kids and my partner and my whatever. So we're going to teach you, kind of get you into the mood so you can run your life smoothly, so you can feel a little more stable and definitely in control of things, just so you can have the confidence to choose toward a life that you really want. So along with a gift of both of my guests telling great stories, we're also going to hear some little heartbreaking stories, because I love it when my guests share personal stuff about themselves. Also kind of funny stuff that we can all identify as well. So my special guests today, first of all, she's here. Let's bring her on, Olivia Chadwick.
Garden Horse.
Hi, Olivia. So nice to have you here.
Thank you for inviting us on. We're very, very happy to be here.
Aw, great book. Oh, I really enjoyed it. It was really super. Let me tell folks what it's about. It's called 17 Runs. Huh? We'll talk about that. The Unbeaten Path to Unlock Life's True Potential. Olivia Chadwick and Garnet Morris, who will be hopefully joining us in just a bit. I know he's jammed. His schedule. I was ready for that in a way. But let me go ahead and introduce who you are a little bit more, and then we're going to jump into it, because I know folks were asking me, well, how are we going to do these things? Give us steps. People always want to know how to change their lives. So, Olivia, you have an MSc in kinesiology. I always kind of like have a hard time pronouncing that. I think I did well.
You did very well.
You're a mental performance coach, certified exercise physiologist. You're a podcaster. We'll be talking about your podcast too in a little bit too. Speaker and founder of Movement Medicine, a first of its kind coaching practice consisting of an integrated team of world class leaders in the application of exercise science. I love that. Also, your podcast, She Knew Better. I love that. That's great. Aiming to showcase guests that offer expert and loving advice to help us overcome life's challenges, deal with mistakes and setbacks, and kind of level up, basically. We got to level up. Let's just all do that, right? Not easy sometimes. Anyway, Olivia Chadwick, thank you again for being here. The book is 17 Runs, The Unbeaten Path to Unlock Life's Potential. Woo, let's start unlocking, okay? Shall we do that?
Yes.
So let's just, what was it that sort of influenced you to get together with Garnet and write a book about running? What was that about?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, if you've read the book, you understand that the book is called 17 Runs. The runs part is because our Garnet and my relationship started with me in the role of the exercise physiologist. I was his run coach. Wow. And Garnet, who had gone through a massive health transformation, came to me because he had a new goal to run the Kananaskis 100-mile relay in the Canadian.
Oh, my
run.
God.
So the book, yeah, massive goal.
Massive goal, right?
Yeah. So the book chronicles the initiation of our relationship going out on runs, but we used it as sort of the backdrop of how our relationship developed, and Garnet sharing a lot of wisdom to me at that time. So what started as me coaching Garnet on this really big goal morphed into a friendship, and ultimately, because of the challenges that I was going on in my life at the time, and because of Garnet had faced really similar challenges in his life, he became my mentor and I was the mentee. So the book, the book chronicles that development. But the running also is a metaphor, you know, it's a metaphor for going after a goal, but a really hard goal, being up against challenges, experiencing a lot of physical, emotional, psychological discomfort, and how we maneuver through those things.
Oh, that's beautiful. Hey, we've got Garnet joining us now. How are you doing there?
Good. I'm phoning in live from the Mississippi State Legislature.
Oh, whoa. Nice.
I just wanted to tell you how important your show is.
Well, God bless you. Thank you so much for joining me on. I'll tell you, it's great to have you. Let me give people a little bit of taste about who you are as well. I already did Olivia's bio, but Garnet is an entrepreneur with over 40 years of experience in the insurance industry, and you founded the Targeted Strategies Group. It's the premier Canadian brokerage firm dedicated to helping entrepreneurs and their families protect, preserve, and optimize their net worth through life insurance policies. And the story that Olivia was talking about, it was amazing. At the age of 40, you transformed your health by losing 130 pounds, after which you became passionate about personal fitness, self-development, and lifelong learning. And it's so nice to have you join us here. And thank you so much, guys, for writing this book. It's a great read and most helpful, I think, to a lot of people.
Thank you.
Aw, you're welcome. Let's jump in right now because I have some emails here. People are writing in from straighttalkdoc@gmail.com saying, let's get to the steps. Everybody wants a quick fix, right? But... so let's talk about some of those bricks that we're dealing with. You call them bricks. I guess they're really forming limited beliefs. So whoever wants to start, what are those bricks that you're talking about and how can we overcome them?
Bricks is a term that Garnet came up with. I love it because it gives you this visual in your mind. And he would say, you've got a brick on your head about that. And it's this idea that you have this very tangible object above your head that's preventing you from thinking up, from moving up in life, from moving forward in life. And then the idea is that if you're wanting to move forward, we got to figure out how we're going to get that brick out of the way.
Oh, boy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it just makes it so tangible. And it's so interesting, too, when we'd have those conversations, because you feel like you're stuck in this emotional challenge. You're not sure what the problem is. You're not sure how to move forward with the problem. And so when somebody like Garnet comes along and identifies for you, that sounds like a brick.
Right.
That sounds like you have a belief problem. You're seeing this a certain way because of your life experiences, because of the way that you perceive yourself, because of what society's told you or what other people in your life have told you, and you following along with those ideas, with those beliefs, is holding you back, and this needs to be reframed and worked through.
That makes a lot of sense. Those bricks, they're heavy. You know, I mean, oh my God. How can we identify, you know, some of these limiting beliefs? I always try to work with people and say, let's go back and let's look at what you bought into or how you were raised or, you know,
so
we can talk about that.
I think it's easiest to say, you know, where is it that in your dream world you think you should be?
Right.
And then quantify that.
Yes.
So, and I use the word was very, very specific. So no rainbow things.
Yeah.
Just stuff that's real.
Right.
And then work backwards and say, so what is it that keeps me from being there?
Right.
And just accept that we have brick after brick after brick after brick all the way through. So it's to learn how to get rid of them, not to think that we just have one and then it's game on. So, you know, we have bricks around family. And as family evolves, we have bricks. We have bricks around what is retirement? What is working? All those things that you have, all these beliefs that are
put
by parents, by the people you hang out with, by social media, by which, you know, and so you just have to get used to saying, like, something's holding me back.
Right.
Got to figure out what it was, what it is, write it down, and then stop doing it.
Boy. And that's the thing, is figuring out what it is, because I mean, if unless we're enlightened or somehow have aha experiences, it's, oh my gosh, that's what I mean, it's difficult sometimes identifying those bricks, and because we have, you know, firmly held false beliefs that we've grown up with, or, you know, a lot of the stuff that from not so healthy environments we've been told about ourselves, which are not true, right?
Yeah, I actually think we make way too many excuses for ourselves.
Okay.
And so, I mean, if you want to be have a garden and you don't have a garden, well, is that a brick or whatever?
Right.
I don't know. But if you're dishonest and that dishonesty is holding you back in life, that's a brick. And now that's something you can decide to fix.
Yes.
If you if you can't figure it out, go get a coach.
Yeah.
You're a coach.
Right? Go get a coach. Yeah.
Go get a coach. Get someone who can teach you the pieces that you're missing. So we mix up bricks from wants.
Sure.
But I have, if anyone says, well, they can't, I say, well, my experience is that that's just a brick. And so the word can't doesn't exist. It's how.
Yes. So can you share a little bit about yourselves personally, and maybe Olivia, what your bricks were growing up and some of your issues that you had to overcome? The same for you, Garnet, as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that Garnet, you know, is so direct, and it can be harder for emotional people like myself to interpret. But the reality is he's actually not wrong in that, you know, sometimes when we're confronted with a brick, it's very, very painful. And the emotional part of it feels really hard to overcome. Right. So he's right. And that's certainly true for me. The biggest bricks in my life have been very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So the one that I share most regularly, because it was the biggest one to overcome and also the most powerful in my life, was being able to talk openly about my mental illness of having an eating disorder.
Oh.
I received messages from a young age when I was going through that I was a problem, that people just wanted it to go away. And I wasn't treated like it was a mental illness. I was treated like I had a set of behaviors that I could just stop, as opposed to getting mental health care that I needed at that time. And though that particular, you know, disorder has a lot of societal stigma related to it. You know, when you tell people about it, they analyze your body, they analyze the way that you eat, and they analyze a lot of different behaviors that you engage in. So you feel that you're being judged quite a bit with that particular disorder. And so for me, a lot of my healing work was being able to work through how I felt about caring for myself around that mental illness, you know, to overcome the shame that I felt of having that particular mental illness. And honestly, that took decades. And being
takes
able
a while.
To, it takes a while. And to be able to move forward, realizing like, I'm not a problem. I had a problem, but I am not a problem. And it doesn't limit me. It doesn't limit my value in the world. It doesn't limit my ability to show up for people. If anything, it improves my ability to be compassionate and empathetic for the challenges that people face, especially in relationship with mental illness, so that I can now be a support person for people who have similar experiences, or at least empathize with people. But actually, I have the desire, you know, I want to help people in those areas for sure.
And that's coming from a loving place, especially as a certified exercise physiologist and, you know, a mental health coach and all that. So I get it. You know, eating disorders, I mean, I worked in clinics for years, and folks, that's a very serious thing, and it takes a while to get over. It's not just, here's an SSRI, let's just get over it. No, I have depression and anxiety due to my feeling of lack of self-worth based on family, people, society, but I'm just dealing what I need to deal with because I need the control somewhere in my life. So,
yeah,
so for sure.
Thank you.
Garnet, can you share with us a little bit about maybe some of the bricks you had to overcome in your life?
Well, I, as luck would have it, I own a brickyard, so I get new ones.
I love it.
I think that, I mean, I overcame lots of things, but it wasn't until I decided that I needed to change that I started doing stuff. So did I feel sorry for myself at times? Did I commiserate? Not sure yet. We all do that, but sure. I kept getting up and getting at it. So I went into a program called Strategic Coach, and we had to make a list of all of the things in our life that were keeping us from being successful.
Right.
And then we had to make an action plan for each one.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little bit of an aha moment when you got to sit there in a room all by yourself and start writing down everything that's keeping you from being successful, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your how fat you are, whether it's, and then it's actually naming it so your brain actually understands what it is that you're trying to tell it. So you can't say, well, I'm slightly overweight. Either you're fat or you're not fat. I mean, that's pretty simple. You're a workaholic, you're not a workaholic. There's no middle roads, but we use those words to cushion ourselves rather than actually frame the problem, make it very clear to our brain, and then work backwards to the steps we need to overcome and give ourselves a meaningful timeline. In other words, 20 years. But so we did this quarter by quarter. So every quarter,
right,
you had to have this one done or you had a measurable progress.
Well said. I love it when you said, I know a lot of people many times, you know, they make too many excuses for what's going on with them. Do you think a lot of people are not able to own up to their own issues?
Yep.
And say, boy, I screwed up, or boy, I should have,
We lack humility. We lack the ability to look in the mirror and to be honest that we made a mistake.
Yep.
And it's getting more like that. So if you look at social media, everybody prays perfect on social media. The perfect meal, the perfect family, the perfect outfit, the perfect everything. And it's all horse patooey. And it's just us trying to impress upon the world that we have it together when we know we don't. And so this whole thing in a book and social media is driving me nuts because we keep framing the positive without actually talking about the part of ourselves that's not so positive and what are we doing about it.
Beautifully said. Can you chime in on that at all, Olivia? Can you agree with him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Garnet is my mentor, right? So I understand how he goes about things, and it can be really confronting when Garnet might tell me, you're not looking at, you're making an excuse. It's difficult to hear that, you know, but if you are honest with yourself, you know, we're never 100% responsible for all of the things that go on. There are circumstantial, but if we're able to, you know, support ourselves inwardly and go, this is really hard to hear, but if I allow myself, I can see the part that I had to play in it and I can be responsible. The benefit of that is that we can do something about that, right? If we can fully own it, we can realize, there's this area that I have a shortcoming. I'm scared of fully showing up. I slightly self-sabotaged myself in this particular way. And therefore I made some mistakes, or I didn't, you know, fully follow through on a commitment in some way. I can do something about that when I know the part that I had to play in it. So I find these things very painful, like emotionally, they're really hard for me. Maybe it's that 30-year difference that I am from Garnet. Yeah. You know, I do feel very intense emotions when I make mistakes. But when somebody like Garnet can be there and say, you're making an excuse.
Yes.
It's very hard to hear. if I can care for myself in that moment and say, yeah, I did, and this is my shortcoming, once I can get through it, usually a full day later, I can reconcile the area of opportunity for me, like the where I could show up and grow up becomes clearer for me. And I feel better about the person that I am when I'm able to do that. You know, if I can genuinely hide from myself, then how am I going to get out of the rut that I'm in? I'm not. So that's pretty despairing, not knowing how you're going to get out of the rut. But if you can apply that wisdom that's Garnet shared and take care of yourself in the process, but then do the work that needs to be done on the flip side of it, then I can say, okay, I know what I need to do to take a step forward. And it's a baby step for sure, but it is a forward step. And that is really encouraging. And a lot of hope can come out of that.
So I'm a today guy. So I'm going to challenge Olivia and really try to make her feel horrible. So if you can watch yourself all day long, watch yourself with honesty and just see how many times you make a mistake, the wrong thing to a child, walking off the curb, just as the light is saying, don't walk.
Right.
Turn to light, driving.
Good metaphor.
they're all mistakes. Sure. So you can either decide to not do that anymore or decide you're going to keep making mistakes. And it doesn't really matter. And there's no, it's just make the bloody decision. So if you're going to jaywalk, then you're a jaywalker.
Yes.
If you're going to tell a little white lie, well, you're a liar. Like, let's be really candid and then we can start to make progress.
Right.
So notice a whole day how many mistakes you make in a day. And you'll make dozens and dozens of them.
Right.
Picking up the fork with the wrong hand.
Yes.
Whatever. Like, just, but watch, because it's human nature.
Sure it is. We're all human.
Yeah. That you make a mistake. The thing is, what did you learn from it?
Right.
Like, not to chastise yourself. Just if you're going to make it again.
That's the point. You know, I think you're right on. It's wonderful, you know, Olivia, you say that Garnet was your mentor and everything. It's really wonderful to have someone you trust in your life who can say, you know, I have a lot of years of experience and maturity, and I'm a coach and I'm a speaker and I'm a guy who manages huge businesses, and I've been there, done that, and this is what I'm seeing. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people, I think, fear coming to therapy. I mean, they tell me, I don't want to be judged. I'm tired of being the bad guy all my life, or growing up being that kid who was always the troublemaker, or feeling bad about myself. So, you know, that's why I avoided you for 4 months. And I'm saying, well, it kind of helps to know what you need to be responsible for and take control. It's not about blaming. It's not about, you know, really emphasizing what a bad person you are. We're all human, right, guys? We all do stuff, but let's clean it up. And
I have tons of years of therapy, and I've had some of the wisest therapists you could possibly imagine. And the most profound one, I got probably 5 years of therapy from someone who was a therapist from the Buddhist perspective. And so it was, but Garnet, it's today. What are you doing about it today?
Yes.
So bringing it to the present. And I cried so much at so many sessions, they started charging me extra for the Kleenexes because I could just like,
love it. You're
and
so funny.
Where I learned to open, and really, if people don't care for me, then that's fine. With, you know, I mean, you know, one in two people aren't going to like you. That's the divorce statistics. So that's actually starting out with someone you love. So. Whatever. And I just roll with it. And
That's right. Thank you for sharing that story. We always have to have a lot of tissues for issues. So I get it. You know, I get scared when in my office my tissue supply runs out. I'm like, oh my God, we gotta do this. By the way, in case you guys just joined us here, I'm talking with the authors of an amazing book. We're going to talk about why it's called what it's called. 17 Runs, The Unbeaten Path to Unlock Life's True Potential. And I'm speaking today with my special guests, authors Olivia Chadwick and Garnet Morris. Lovely, well-written book. Wonderful. I don't like to, you know, sort of self-help book, but it really is. It opens your eyes to a lot of things that you can get over. Some of the fear-based issues that we've been, the bricks that we've been brought up with, all those things that we learn about that are scary and why we're awful people. And blah, 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 blah. So let's look at the importance of, you know, certain things. And it's sort of like hope-based motivation, right? What does that mean? Hope-based motivation. Can you give people some insight about that?
Yeah, I mean, I speak about that sometimes, especially I'll say in my world as an exercise professional, right? A lot of people who come to me within that industry, within that world, are coming usually because they have a lot of fear.
Right.
Typically, that's that initial, the fear is the driver of why they're reaching out for support. So sometimes the narratives that I hear are, if I'm here right now, and it's going in this direction, I'm afraid of what it's going to look like in 10 years.
Right.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to live independently. I'm afraid I'm going to end up like my mother. I can't believe how many times I've heard that statement, but honestly, many, many times.
Right, right, right. That's fear-based motivation.
A lot of fear-based motivation, you know.
And I don't want to be like my mother.
No, I mean, it's kind of a universal thing, right? And this makes sense. You know, this is the impetus while people are coming through the door. But the problem with that type of motivation is when we start to take action to, that we think is going to mitigate that fear of being a prophecy fulfilled, we start to feel a bit better about ourselves. We start to actually reduce the fear a little bit. But if that was our initial motivator, if we don't change our source of motivation, what is going to keep us moving forward?
Right.
It doesn't last very long. And honestly, it's so painful to be in a fear state that we work pretty hard to try and mitigate it, to try and eliminate it.
Yeah.
But once it's gone, why are we going to keep showing up for ourselves? Right. So my role in that world is to try and help people move towards a hope-based motivation, which aligns with our dreams in the book or aligns with our goal setting in the book. What is the version of yourself in the future that you're aspiring to move towards? A long-term goal, a big, lofty goal that you feel really, really a strong drive to want to move towards. That's the fulfilling, even from a scientific perspective, we know that that is truly what drives intrinsic motivation, that true desire that you have to do something for a future version of yourself.
Right, the intention. Mm-hmm. That's huge. In your podcast, it's called She Knew Better. I love that, by the way.
Thanks.
She knew better, but she didn't do it, right? You bring in experts to help unpack the societal messages that we've internalized. What are some of the most common societal messages that you both hear that people are complaining or dealing with? And I'm not blaming, folks. I'm just saying. What do you guys hear most often in your work?
I mean, I'll go first because I feel really passionate about the podcast and the reason why it's in the world. From my own experience, really, and then getting to work with many, many women, my background, my research was in self-compassion. And one of the primary ideas in self-compassion is that women score lower in self-compassion. So that ability to be kind to themselves and talk to themselves in a positive way, we score a lot lower than men from a gendered perspective. And so what I find is we receive a lot of messages through social conditioning. And as women, we tend to feel that when we have problems in life, it's often not circumstances or the culture or our expectations. We often feel like we're to blame. We are very critical of ourselves. We're not as kind to ourselves as our male counterparts are able to be, ironically, even though we're carers and nurturers and caregivers. When it comes to ourselves, we actually don't have the resources to care for ourselves in a way that would help us grow. And so the podcast, the idea of the podcast is we start to name, well, what are the influences in our life that are causing us to feel like we're not good enough? Because then we can realize that the narratives that we have about ourselves don't need to be of criticism. It's not that I'm not good enough, but maybe the world is giving us messages that are not accurate, right? Like social media, not accurate. And so if we're trying to live up to that ideal, we are going to end up feeling bad about ourselves.
Sure.
I mean, social media is a really good one. A lot of gendered norms, like the roles that women perform in terms of taking care of kids, of performing in the home, of household duties, a lot of these expectations that women have, the idea is that we can start to question, like, is this the desire that I have for my life? Am I living the life in a way that is in alignment of how I want to live my life, or am I trying to live up to somebody else's expectations,
right?
Or the world's expectations of how I live? And the purpose of the podcast is to try and unpack all of that.
All right. That's great. Garnet, do you have anything to chide in about that?
Well, I just cut to the chase. So yeah. I don't ever use the word.
I love it. It's yin yang with you guys.
Yeah, it is.
I don't use the word hope. So I either will or I won't. And so, you know, when talking to Keenan, he was saying, well, I hope to do this. I hope to ride my motorcycle to Alaska. I said, well, Keenan, either you are or you aren't. So just make the decision. Like,
let's not hope. Let's just go for it.
Yeah. So we spend so much time not getting a result.
Right.
That and we need to think about that, because it's so much easier to theorize why we won't decide to do something than it is to actually make the decision, feel uncomfortable, and get going.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not knocking what Olivia's saying. You know, guys have their challenges too.
Yeah, sure.
That we just don't talk about them much, but it's still most of our problems are by having things that we hope to have and not actually dealing with it by deciding to go and do it.
So it's important to get comfortable in that discomfort zone, is what you're saying.
Yeah, just quit hoping and just start deciding.
Yeah.
If you're fat, don't hope that you're weight. Just decide and figure out what you have to do. I mean, everything is in the public domain to figure out those things.
Yeah. In your book, you talk about the easiest example of, just doing, get with it. Do something that's uncomfortable. You said the easiest example to follow is learning to run, right? So let's get to the, subject of the book. It's 17 runs, the unbeatable path to unlock life's true potential. How did you guys meet? What is this running thing? And can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Go ahead, Olivia. You can tell this.
Yeah. I mean, well, I described at the beginning that we met. I was the coach and Garnet was the athlete. Garnet came to me and we made a goal to progress his health goals. We've already said he went on a massive health transformation, but he wasn't done in transforming. He wasn't done in growing, as none of us are. And so there was a big goal that we set to run the Kananaskis 100-mile relay as a team. It's a team-based activity where you go out to the Canadian Rockies and you're running essentially uphill most of the way through the mountains. The book chronicles us out on runs. That's how our relationship developed. There's something about the natural nature of running. The first 10 to 15 minutes, you're kind of silent. You have a lot of internal chatter in your brain going, oh, it's really cold today. I think I feel tired. I don't really know if I want to be here. Maybe I'll just take it easy today. Maybe I'll cut shorter. Like, your brain is trying really hard to figure out how to make this really uncomfortable thing of running more comfortable. This is a great metaphor for so many of life's experiences, right? But the cool thing that happens with running is around 10 to 15 minutes, our neurophysiology changes over. You know, we have these neurotrophic hormones that kick in, like BNDF and endorphins eventually, that start to change our brain chemistry. Right. And we start to have more positive thoughts. So you're running along and all of a sudden your brain just naturally wanders to maybe a book that you're reading or something that's going on. So Garnet and I would be running along. And like around that time, I'd be like, so Garnet, like, how's your week going? And then he would start sharing. But because you're in this very open mind experience in running, it wouldn't be superficial at all, which is kind of not how Garnet and I are anyways. We got into these really deep conversations and we would be sharing the books that we're reading and the challenges that we're facing. And they became very philosophical.
Yes.
Like I said, I was going through many challenges at that time, and Garnet was starting to help me go through, maneuver through a lot of these challenges and talking me through it.
Yes.
The other thing that we experienced was sharing stories about our lives of formative years that ended up being really similar. Garnet would say it's, and I think this is funny to even think about for me anyways, is like Olivia is a reincarnated version of me, you know, 30 years earlier, if you believe that you can be reincarnated where you're still alive in this lifetime.
That's right. Hey, you know, quantum different time zones, frequencies and all that.
Sure. Totally. We need Deepak Chopra on the phone. So, which is funny because we did, you know, we had similar childhood traumas, sexual abuse, the suicide of our siblings, you know, grew up in poverty. There was these real parallels in our story. So we would be running in this space where we just had this vulnerability to share from a really heart-centered place. And in doing so, as all connection is built in vulnerability, Garnet and I built a connection in running, and we became good friends. We felt like we understood one another, and it came to a point where we would show up for each other on the run. Yes, to do the training. There was always that baseline, but we were also really showing up for each other emotionally, you know, like helping each other maneuver through at that time.
Yes.
I kind of went on a monologue, but it was a really special time in our lives.
Yes.
And really was the reason why we decided, that we had the type of relationship that could go on the journey of writing a book together.
Perfect. I love that, guys. And you both bonded while, you know, discussing all of your troubled childhood issues. How perfect is that? And as you said, Garnet, the goal is to learn from those experiences and try to understand yourself better and how you tried to cope with them growing up, because you didn't have the wisdom as a little one necessarily. That being said, one of my mentors, psychiatrist who is transformed already into the other frequency, Dr. Mm-hmm. David Biscott, used to say to me, you know, Michelle, you can't pick your family. You can pick your friends though. So in the book, you guys get into the importance of surrounding yourselves with the chosen family. Can you both talk about how important that is and why?
So this is, kind of brick that is right now. So we're trying to blend my wife's children, my children, and our new family.
Oh, lovely.
Actually get them all on the same values wavelength, because we have all these companies and all these businesses, and I'm like, not that people work in them, but it's something that they'll have to be responsible for, and we have staff and we have so that we have a program we're just starting on now using mentors and that to align the family's interests so that we have the same core values.
Lovely.
And if we can't get to the same core values, then we have to take steps to keep those with the core values together, and because they're not going to disrupt each other's lives, and then, you know, make arrangements for the ones that who, you know, have their own set of values, you know, to do whatever. And so that's a really hard brick. Those are really hard. You just got to do it, because you can't have one person disrupting life for everybody else.
Right.
And so That's family to me. So family is a two-way thing. You have to continuously earn your way to be in the family and the right to be there by how you treat the other family members. Conversely, there's a responsibility in the family to look out for you.
Sure.
And so like I have a visualization for that I use, and it's the whole family walking down the beach holding hands, and each person's looking to the person on their right to make sure they can keep up. And so that's how I see value, shared values, and how a family should function.
It's beautiful. I love visualization, because it's, you know, it's the old, what do they call it, psycho-cybernetics tool that Olympians use. Visualizing the positive outcome, visualizing to keep yourself in check, right? So I love that. And you embrace the feeling of, oh, am I keeping up with this person? Yes, I guess I am, you know. And that's not family necessarily, solid family, bloodline, DNA. It's family are your friends who you really have bonded with and vibe with, right?
Those that would do for you what you would do for them.
Oh, that's beautiful. So so your blended family?
So there is two children from my family, two from my wife's family, and three children, well, they're not children, but three that have joined our family.
Oh, I love that. So do you mind me asking how many children that means?
7.
Ooh, yeah, I love it.
And so Keenan is the youngest, so you won't count him just yet. In this. So we have one boy, and the rest are girls. So
he's lucky. Well, he gets pampered, doesn't he?
No, that means he's got to learn to be humble. Not to get to rule the world. And so, but what you have to really do is build a values-based system that is everybody is on an equal keel. Nobody is the boss of anything, and a consensus has to be built, and it has to be built rapidly enough to be an entrepreneurial family. So we have 30-odd companies. So we have to make decisions on all those investments.
Wow.
And it doesn't always want to be me.
Right. That's right.
So we have to build that. So we have a book that's doing it, and that's to me family. So it's a double door. Everybody has a responsibility both directions.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, everybody does. Absolutely. And do you have a chosen family yourself, Olivia?
Thank you for bringing me in, because I love talking about this particular chapter in the book, and I love the Garnet brought visualization into it, because that's actually like a new part of how this concept is even evolving in my own life, because all of the concepts in the book are constantly evolving. You know, they're not a one and done situation. So when I share the book with people, one of the most heartwarming things that I find, being that family is a basic need for everyone, you know, that sense of belonging and safety that everyone has. But those of us that come from dysfunctional family backgrounds often feel like that is missing in some way. We can look to other people who seem to have, you know, biological families that they're really close with. I think we do wonder sometimes, like, what would have been possible if we had that foundation in our lives and we didn't feel always alone and isolated. Right. And so when people read that chapter, they realize that, you know, you might not have been born into a biological family, but you have an opportunity every day to go out and bring people into your network and connect with them and be open to that connection with people and build these strong bonds and these strong relationships that can be that source of strength, that can be that sense of belonging. So I love this chapter. However, the other piece of it, which I love that Garnet shared the visualization, is, you know, if you focus on the narrative of the dysfunction, it doesn't allow you to wonder what could be possible if you felt safe. What would you want your chosen family to look like and feel like and behave like? And recently Garnet challenged me to do that more with visualization, which is so funny because it's a tool that I use as a sports psychologist, right? That I could in sport and I have used in my career life. But when I was thinking about it as my family, I hadn't done that yet. And I'm honest about that. You know, we share this tool in the book, but I hadn't done that in this one particular area. But when he dropped that little nugget into my I allowed myself to go there, I realized how fulfilling that opportunity can be. You know, even just the opportunity to visualize it was the energy that I needed to go, okay, I can take the steps forward against some of those limiting beliefs that I have, that a lot of them do surround family for me personally.
Right.
And say, well, what am I going to do about that? Like, what little actions am I going to take? And then I started taking some of those actions. So yeah, we're always learning and growing. And I love that chapter in the book. So I hope people get to it because it's towards the end.
No, I think it's great. And I think a lot of people can really identify with that. You know, because it's difficult sometimes, you know, in our bloodline family, right? Or our, you know, so there are some real difficult personalities because of their bricks that we are dealing with, and we're trying to mesh, and everybody's trying to be on the same page and all that. And one of the most common complaints I have is, how do I deal with these difficult people in my life, the family members who I feel obligated to be with or help? Or, you know, there's a lot of personality disorders that are very confusing and hard to deal with. So
there's a beautiful saying in Thich Nhat Hanh's book. It's called the sword of discernment. And so you use this even with family. So you help a family member so they can help themselves. But if they come back to you for help a second time and they haven't helped themselves, the sword of discernment, you're done. They're still your sister, but you just say, no, I'm not helping anymore because you won't help yourself, and I don't see you helping others. So I'm going to put my efforts where the efforts will do some good. And it sounds kind of cold, but that's the only way to not destroy your own life.
Right. Beautifully said. And I think a lot of people, they don't have even self-awareness because of, you know, perhaps whatever the personality disorder gets in the way. Sometimes people, and I'm not making an excuse. No, they just don't have the chip, you know, whatever that means, that says, wow, I'm doing this to other people, or I'm difficult, or, but it's like, hello, get a clue. You don't have a life per se with a decent relationship with people. Family members are pulling away, etc. So basically, you're talking about drawing boundaries, right? Yep. Saying that's kind of it. And
just, I love the statistic. One out of two people statistically are not going to like you. So no. Like, not get too fussed about it.
Right. Exactly. And that comes into a whole background of bricks. You know, why don't they like you? Oh, they look like your mom.
Well, you can buy an imaginary t-shirt on Amazon that says, I really don't care if people like me. I just put that on every morning and then I don't have a problem with it.
Well, good for you. I mean, that's a really good place to be. You know, it's just like, doesn't matter. It's somebody said to me, it's none of my business what other people think of me. And it's like, oh, that is profound.
Can't control it. So why even worry about it? Just move on.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Unless someone says, well, I don't like you because you're mean to me, or whatever that might say. Wait a minute. How you talk it out? How am I mean to you? What have I done to you to hurt? You know, it's an exchange. And then if it seems rational or like, ooh, I'm going to clean my act up a little bit, be a little nicer to you. But and then, you know, the dialogue can start, you know, well, I'm not nice to you because you hurt me when. And then, you know, if you can both agree to disagree and understand each other, whatever, that's always a good thing as well. But
for
I like
sure. I know that Garnet says that, and I do obviously believe that he follows that practice. But I also know, as sort of the other side of it, as I know that Garnet shows up as the best version of himself every day. And there's very, you know, tangible evidence that I could provide of how he does that. So it's like showing up as the best version of yourself and then still knowing that, you know, 50% of people still won't like you.
True. And that's, you know, in your book, Garnet, you say, you know, be true to the critical values. The value of honesty is one of the most critical. Being honest with yourself, and it applies in many ways. But and be perfectly honest with yourself.
And it's an unequivocal value. You're either honest or you're dishonest.
You're lying to yourself.
It's one or the other. And so pick. So if you're honest, then always, like I said, watch yourself all day long. Am I being honest?
Right.
No, now, honest doesn't always mean saying what's in the back of your mouth. Sometimes it's keeping your mouth shut. Because not prepared to answer the question, you don't answer the question dishonestly. You just don't answer the question. So you simply say, I'm not answering that question. Mm-hmm. So because you still have a, you know, you don't need to hurt someone's feelings just by being brutally honest. Just keep your mouth shut. It won't poison you.
Exactly. That's well said. I'm not sure how to answer that question. You know, because that's lovely. You don't want to hurt them or be cruel to them, but you're just kind of like,
That's what Jack Nicholson said, you can't handle the truth.
That's right. I remember that. What a great scene that is, you know. Anyway, folks, if you'd like more information about this book that Olivia Chadwick has written along with Garrett Morris, it's called 17 Runs. It's about the runs they did together and how they overcame a lot of stuff and talked and communicated. They both, it's kind of like soulmate friends, kind of, I get. It's called 17 Runs, The Unbeaten Path to Unlock Life's True Potential. Just about out of time. We have a hard break with the news coming up, but I wanted to thank you both so much for coming on and helping out a lot of our guests.
Well, thank you. And please send your assessment to me and by email so I can know what I have to work on.
Your professional. You're so cool.
Your clinical notes.
You are perfect, Garrett. No. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate you both. And thank you for sharing this with the world.
Yeah, thank you.
All thank right. you, Michelle. Thanks All for right. your time. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, I always say, take care of yourself first, you know, and it's not narcissism. It's just, then you'll be great for others. All right. Thanks for listening today on The Couch. I'm Dr. Michelle. Bye.
You're listening to On The Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.